I now wish, my lord, to turn to the question of guerrilla warfare and how it came to be considered. By 1961, scores of Africans had died as a result of racial friction. In 1920, when the famous leader Masabalala was held in Port Elizabeth Jail, 24 of a group of Africans who had gathered to demand his release were killed by the police and white civilians. More than 100 Africans died in the Bulhoek affair. In 1924, over 200 Africans were killed when the administrator of Southwest Africa led a force against a group which had rebelled against the imposition of dog tax. On the 1st of May, 1950, 18 Africans died as a result of police shootings during the strikes. On the 21st of March, 1960, 69 unarmed Africans died at Sharpeville. How many more Sharpeville would that be in the history of our country? And how many more Sharpevilles could the country stand without violence and terror becoming the order of the day? And what would happen to our people when that stage was reached? In the long run, we felt certain we must succeed, but at what cost to ourselves and the rest of the country? And if this happened, how could black and white ever live together again in peace and harmony? These were the problems that faced us. And these were our decisions. Experience convinced us that rebellion would offer the government limitless opportunities for the indiscriminate slaughter of our people. But it was precisely because the soil of South Africa is already drenched with the blood of innocent Africans that we felt it our duty to make preparations as a long-term undertaking to use force in order to defend ourselves against force. If war became inevitable, we wanted to be ready when the time came, and for the fight to be conducted on terms most favorable to our people. The fight which held out the best prospects for us and the least risk of life to both sides was guerrilla warfare. We decided, therefore, in our preparations for the future, to make provision for the possibility of guerrilla warfare.